oral history series sponsored by the Decatur Public Library. Our guest today is Mr. Don Lawson, consultant for the Wagner Castings Company. We are recording at the Decatur Public Library on August 14, 1987. Welcome to our series, Mr. Lawson.
Thank you.
All right. Well, let's start with a very basic question for the benefit of people who aren't too well informed. What is a castings company?
Well, we have, since 1917, produced castings that range, they are iron castings. They range in the size of probably a few ounces to some 30 pounds. And a casting in our particular business, about 70% of our business is automotive. And it's distributed probably fairly equally between the big three, Chrysler, Ford, and General Motors. We make small transmission parts, iron castings that are machined at, we do no machining, we just ship raw iron castings of a shape and a form that after they're machined will be put into, say, possibly a transmission, a compressor, like a crankshaft for a compressor. We make the front steering knuckles for the automobile, for Chrysler, that's on the right front and the left front wheel. But basically, a casting company melts iron, melts steel as a combination of iron and steel with a certain composition, and then pours this iron into a mold, which gives it, it gives it its shape and form. And after it has solidified, this casting is taken out of the mold and probably ground. The gate is ground. The gate is the area where the iron flows in to the casting. Then the casting is cleaned, and any other grinding done on it, if there's burrs or fins, and it's prepared for shipment in crates to the automotive people. Now, that's 70% of our business. The other 30% goes to the farm implement businesses, compressor businesses, small engine business. That probably makes up pretty much the entire scope of our business. As far, we are largely automotive, and the spillover after that goes to farm implement and compressor and machining and business. But that's pretty much what a casting company is.
Well, that's very helpful. In other words, we use your products every day, don't we? In
yes.
Our automobiles and
yes, and washers, dryers.
Right.
We make small little gears that are machined and put into washers and dryers for Norge Company down at Herron, Illinois. And yes, that's.
Do these people, companies, send you patterns or pictures or designs?
We start from blueprints,
mm-hmm.
And after the we estimate the price of a casting from a blueprint, and if we are competitive and we are awarded the job, then patterns are built, and patterns are always the property of the customer. Now, in some cases, the customer will have their own patterns, which will be shipped to us, and we can rig them to go onto our machines.
That's the mold.
That's the pattern that the mold that goes into the mold. Goes into the mold. Once the mold is made, the pattern is taken out, and the mold is closed, and then the iron is poured into it.
Well, that is certainly helpful. Let's find out something about the history of the Wagner Castings Company.
Well, okay, I would like to read here from Mr. Wagner, Sr. wrote the first 50 years history of Wagner Casting. While he and his wife were on a Scandinavian cruise in the summer of 1967. Now, if we take 50 years away from that, we go back to 1917, and I could read here of some of our early history that he has written, because if I do that, there won't be any mistakes. Mm-hmm. And this is coming right from Mr. Wagner Sr.
Fine, please do.
Okay, the records show that on October the 23rd, 1917, Mr. Wagner's father, Albert W. Wagner, subscribed for $27,000 worth of stock, and Henry Grady and four Milwaukee associates added a total of $13,000 to launch the company. The incorporators were A.W. Wagner, C.C. LaForgie, and T.W. Samuels, and with that, the business of making gray iron castings got started. Until January 1919, the bulk of business came from castings for ordnance vehicles being produced by the Holt Manufacturing Company, later to become Caterpillar Tractor. Shortly after the 1918 armistice, Bill Grady came to the company and on January 27, 1919, was elected secretary and continued until June of 1920, at which time the Grady interests were purchased by J.D. Johnson, who is the still a insurance business in Decatur, R.E. Persinger, and Charlie Powers. During this time, the operations were being conducted in a 70-foot-wide building built in 1908 by the Central Malleable Iron Company, occupying half of the block on Sangamon Street, east of Jasper. After a disastrous fire which destroyed the annealing and melting facilities, the plant was purchased by George Hackett and was re-equipped for production of gray iron. On December 18, 1919, the property which had been leased from Hackett was bought for $40,000. The property fronted on Sangamon Street, 175 feet from the alley to Lober Street and half of that block. The balance was occupied by Chambers Bearing Quinlan Company, and our property extended 487 feet south to the Wabash right-of-way. The office was on Lober Street, some 75 feet south of Sangamon. It was hardly a substantial or elegant structure, but it did have one toilet room. It was heated by a coal stove, and one corner was partitioned as a private office for my father and Bill Grady.
Your father then was connected early with the company.
Well, my father came to Wagner in 1930 from Hammond, Indiana, and was the first, I would call, general superintendent at Wagner Casting.
Well, so you are very well acquainted with the company and its history. There's the year 1917 was a historic year in itself. We were at war then, were we not?
Right. We were, and Mr. Wagner Sr. was, I think, at that time, when his father was starting the business here in Decatur, he was in the U.S. Marine Corps in that First World War. And when he was discharged from the Marines in the summer of 1919, and after graduation from Rose Poly in Terre Haute, Indiana, he came to work. I think he came to work as a bookkeeper. Mm-hmm. And that's the way Mr. Wagner started his, Mr. Wagner Sr., what I call Sr. He was the president and chief executive officer when I came with the company in 1947.
Good. Now, are there any other events that have shaped the history of the company?
Well, I think probably The thing that shaped the company more than anything was some of the events that happened in the early 40s, 1940s, when Mr. Wagner was able to penetrate the automotive industry in Detroit. In lots of ways, Chrysler Corporation was really the company that helped Wagner Casting be Wagner Casting of today, because in the automotive industry, the numbers of castings that are required for the automotive field are large, and we were able to be, get into a mode of lots of business if we could make castings for the automotive industry rather for the tractor industry. There weren't that many tractors. There weren't that many road graders, and making castings for Caterpillar Tractor Company is not nearly, the numbers are not nearly as large as when you make castings for the automotive industry. And when Mr. Wagner was able to get into Chrysler in 1940, that kind of started the growth, the big growth of Wagner Casting.
Yeah. Well, you have told us some very interesting facts about the history of the company. What's the situation of the company today?
Well, I believe that the situation is very good.
Excuse me, before we go on with that, however, we haven't quite finished with the history, because mm-hmm. you're making history now, aren't you?
You bet. You bet.
Can you explain?
Well, I think that up until when I said the 1940s, Wagner started to grow because of the automotive industry. I came with the company in the late 40s, and at that time, we were probably melting as far as our size. We probably had 200 employees, and we were probably melting somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 ton of iron per day. And we slowly grew over the years, and today we have the capability of probably melting 1,000 ton of iron per day, and we have, instead of 200 employees, we have around 1,000. So from 1940 until 1987, we've grown from 200 employees to 1,000, and our daily output has grown from some 35 to 40 ton a day to about 1,000 ton a day.
Well, that's really an impressive statistic.
That's pretty much the situation as we see it today, and I think that Wagner is continuing to grow. We're continuing to try to stay abreast of the times, and also be competitive in what we call a world market. It's certainly not a market that's just in this country. We compete daily with the Japanese, with the Taiwanese, the Koreans, the Mexicans, the South Americans. There are foundries in each one of these countries, and it used to be that we were competing with foundries that were in the United States. Well, in the last 10 years, our foreign competition has really become fierce.
It's becoming a world market, isn't it?
It is very definitely a world market. There are castings coming into this country from all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are some methods you might have about meeting this competition?
Well, the way we try to meet our competition is by quality. We cannot compete with the labor rates that we have in this country. There's very few companies that can compete with the Japanese, who may work for a bag of rice a day. And the way we try to do it, we try to make castings better than our foreign competition. We try to give them the service that is required. If we have a problem, with a casting in Detroit. We try to have someone there within 12 to 24 hours to see what that problem is. And I don't think that the foreign people react that fast. As far as quality, we have received the highest quality awards that Ford, General Motors, and Chrysler has to give. Ford's award is known as the Q101. Chrysler is known as the Pentastar Award, and General Motors is known as the Spear Award. Well, we have all three of these quality awards, along with awards from Caterpillar Tractor, Cummins Engine, BorgWarner. We have received nearly every quality awards from every one of our customers. So when they buy castings from Wagner, they know that they're going to get a casting that is of quality, and they're not going to have very many problems with it. Now, they can buy a casting cheaper than they can from Wagner Castings, but at the same time, I believe they're going to have some problems, more problems in quality than what we do.
What about your workforce? Do you have methods of hiring and training your workforce?
Yes, we've always believed that people is really what made Wagner Castings. We can buy the most expensive equipment in the world. We can buy the most expensive material to melt with and all of that, but it takes people to put it together, and it takes people that if Wagner Casting has grown over the years, it's basically because of people. And we've tried to train them. We've tried to train them as they come in as young people. We have training programs that they can learn from. And because of that, we think that probably people are our most important asset, and we certainly do try to train.
Are there any... do you have any labor problems that you have to face?
Well, we have the Allied Industrial Workers Union, which is based out of Milwaukee, and I think that the labor relations at Wagner Casting of management versus labor has always been very, very good. I think that in the early 40s, when the company was being organized by the union, there was some fierce fighting about it. But today, I think that on a daily basis, labor and management probably talk more about problems than we ever did.
So it's really more cooperation than competition between labor and management.
Oh yes, it's cooperation. If there isn't any cooperation between labor and management, it'll never work. And like I say, the labor leaders and the management get together probably. There's very few days that I don't talk to the either the president of the union or the chairman of the bargaining committee. They can come in and talk on a daily basis whenever they wish.
You also offer some incentives to your staff, don't you? I understand that you have training in progress.
The union people, the laboring people, are an awful lot of them are on incentive. The molders and the iron pourers and the grinders are all paid what we call a base rate, and then depending on how fast they work, they can earn another probably somewhere between 25% and 35% incentive as far as pay on their weekly paycheck, and this gives them a very good rate. We probably pay our Our rate right now, hourly rate, with fringes, that's pension and insurance and medical and all of that, we probably are in the $18 an hour. We probably pay about $12 to $13, and we're somewhere in the neighborhood of 50% fringes, of which the people at Wagner, I think, are paid very well.
Good, and you do have good relations with the staff.
Yes, yes, the relations are excellent.
Uh-huh. Let's talk about your own background for a few minutes. You have already told us your father was connected with Wagner, and so you naturally came into the company in that way, but let's tell us something about your own background.
Okay, of course, we've always lived in Decatur. I graduated from Decatur High School in 1947, went to Millikan University, and graduated from Millikan in 1951, spent 2 years in the Army during the Korean War, and when I got out, went back to work. I worked summers at Wagner. At that time, you could work if you were 16, 17 years old. And I worked, when I was in high school, I worked summers at Wagner, and when I was at Millikan, I worked summers. And then after the Korean War, I went to work on a permanent basis for Wagner. I went into a management training program, and from that, I went into the laboratory and worked as a assistant metallurgist, and then I was a foreman. I was probably a foreman in most all of the departments, and a general foreman. Then I moved to superintendent, and then I was plant manager of the Malleable Foundry. I was plant manager of the Ductile Foundry, and then I was factory manager, and I was then promoted to vice president of manufacturing, then vice president of industrial and labor relations, and in December of last year, 1986, I retired and now have a contract to work as a consultant for Wagner Casting. In 1983, eight of us, of the top officers of the company, bought the company from the Wagner family. That happened in 1983. And since then, we changed nothing. We didn't change the name or anything. It's still Wagner Castings. But since 1983, the ownership has been within eight people, and a ninth has been added. And today, we have signed a letter of intent to sell the company to Sudbury Incorporated in Cleveland, Ohio.
What changes will that mean?
Well, hopefully it will mean good changes. Hopefully it will be an advantage. The employees they'll be able to grow with the company. In 1983, when we bought the company, we're so highly leveraged that it's very difficult to grow as fast as we wanted to grow. With the Sudbury Company, we think that we can make some capital expenditures that will help the company grow even faster. So if that happens, we'll be able to hire more people from Decatur. The company can grow, it'll be good for the community, and we'll be putting more money into the community. So we think that the buy from for the Sudbury company in Cleveland can bring certain things to the community that we haven't been able to do.
And that will stay here in Decatur?
It'll stay here just exactly the way it is. The officers and the people that work there will stay in place. Sudbury has a philosophy to buy well-run small companies and then let them do their thing and continue to operate basically the way they have in the past, and that's the way the other companies that Sudbury own, they have told us that that's exactly the way they do it.
Will they send anyone here to work with you?
No, we don't believe so.
All on your own?
Right, just like we have been, with some more financial help.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds good, doesn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Yes.
Well, now, you have already told us a good deal about how Wagner Castings have contributed to the growth of Decatur. Do you want to add anything to that?
Well, I think naturally, like I mentioned, we have gone from 200 employees to 1,000, and hopefully in the next 20 to 30 years, if we can continue to grow the way we have grown, and with the help of Sudbury, maybe someday we'll have 2,000 employees, and if we have 2,000 employees in Decatur, that means that Decatur itself is growing because of the fact that with the 2,000 employees instead of 1,000, we're pumping more money into the community, which is an advantage to the community and makes the community even richer.
And offering more positions, more jobs for people here.
You bet.
Bringing more business into Decatur.
You bet. You bet. I think it has nothing but good and nothing but positive things about it.
What do you think about the future of Decatur?
I think the future of Decatur is good. There are companies in Decatur, like ADM, is one of the very finest companies in the world, and their corporate headquarters are here. Now, Staley's, I think, will remain in Decatur, and there's Mueller, and Wagner. There's Firestone, and we've gone through somewhat of some tough times, but I think Decatur has turned the corner, and I think we're on the way up, and I see Decatur as a growing. We're centrally located in this country. We're centrally located in Illinois, and I see Decatur as growing, yes.
Well, that certainly is very encouraging, and we wish you very good success in not only we know you've had success in the past, but also in the future, and with your new ownership. It really has been a very inspiring story that you have told us.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
And thank you very much for sharing your experiences with us, Mr. Lawson. You have been listening to Mr. Don Lawson, consultant with the Wagner Castings Company in Decatur. And this is Betty Turnell speaking for the Decatur Public Library.